Good morning, everyone. Today is the 12th of September, 2013, and we are in the Techniques of Integration webinar commentaries. We have now completed, I think I want to call it our first pass, through the techniques for the first, second, third, and fourth rays. We are now into the rays of attribute. And we are about ready to begin number 12 with Ray 5. And it's a bit of a longer commentary. So I think what I'll do is to keep the whole thing visible. I'll go over here and into these techniques. And we have the Ray 5 technique. Towards me I draw the garment of my God. I see and know his form. I take that garment piece by piece. I know its shape and color, its form and type, its parts component, and its purposes and use. I stand amazed. I see naught else. I penetrate the mysteries of form, but not the mystery. I see the garment of my God. I see naught else. Love of the form is good, but only as the form is known for what it is, the veiling vase of life. Love of the form must never hide the life which has its place behind, the one who brought the form into the light of day and preserves it for his use, the one who lives and loves and serves the form, the one who is. The word goes forth from soul to form. Behind that form I am. Know me. Cherish and know and understand the nature of the veils of life, but know as well the one who lives. Know me. Let not the forms of nature, their processes and powers, prevent thy searching for the mystery which brought the mysteries to thee. Know well the form, but leave it joyously and search for me. Detach thy thought from form, and find me waiting underneath the veils, the many-sided shapes, the glamours and the thought forms which hide my real self. Be not deceived. Find me, know me. Then use the forms which then will neither veil nor hide the self, but will permit the nature of that self to penetrate the veils of life, revealing all the radiance of God, his power and magnetism, revealing all there is of form, of life, of beauty and usefulness. The mind reveals the one. The mind can blend and fuse the form and life. Thou art the one. Thou art the form. Thou art the mind. Know this. All right, so let us begin to look in a more detailed manner at this stanza for the fifth ray soul integrating its personality of whatever type. And of course, we begin, as always, we begin in a state of non-integration, and in a consciousness which is not yet spiritual and is not yet looking very hard or at all for that which lies behind the obvious. Okay, I think we have to always emphasize this UK English, otherwise the autocorrect will not work. Whoops. So it is the personality functioning, albeit an intelligent and rapidly integrating personality, in a sense, the observer of nature, the scientist, who draws towards himself the outer form of the inner deity. Towards me, the personality, I draw the outer form, the garment of God, the outer form of the inner deity. And that is all that appears, we can say, that which appears in the lower three worlds and increasingly in the etheric world, etheric worlds, and later all that appears in the lower 18 subplanes, and later in the 21 lower subplanes. Excuse me, which constitute the dense physical vehicle of the planetary logos and the dense physical vehicle of the solar logos, and are, from the cosmic point of view, not principled, though from the systemic point of view, they are principled. So what really is the garment? Well, if you study the works of Annie Besant and C.W. Leadbeater, you will see they were doing inner research within that garment of God. They were looking at forms on the astral plane and also looking at forms on the lower mental plane and giving reports regarding those forms. So the garment can be subtler than we normally suspect when we simply look at the outer world and say, yes, that's the garment of God. And yet it's still a garment because it's covering that which is principled and that which is the subjective aspect of the deity. In this case, let us say, the planetary logos. I see and know his form. The idea of exact knowledge is here. Exact knowledge of the form. I take that garment, I take it under examination, piece by piece. I have, in relation to the garment, in relation to the garment, I, the one who examines, I have specialized interests and do not yet see the whole of it, but only parts which I study intensively. And the limitation of vision of the fifth ray type in the early stages is a limitation upon understanding, because we have the specialistic consciousness here, perhaps knowing a great deal about particular things, but not necessarily how they fit in the larger context. So we have the specialistic consciousness. We find this even in medicine. The age of the, maybe the generalist is returning now, the generalist. But there was a time when, maybe if you went into the hospital, you had to see many different doctors, each one of them a specialist in regarding the functioning of a certain part of your body. And the question is, in what they prescribed to cure a problem in one part of the body, would it have an ill effect on another? Because perhaps the whole was not taken into consideration. At least that's the exaggerated position. So when I study this garment, I study that which is before my senses, let's put it that way. I study that which my senses reveal. In this case, usually, the five lower senses, hearing, touch, sight, taste, and smell. So as I examine carefully the garment of God, I know its shape, that is, the way it is distinct from all other things in terms of its outline, its color, its form, the particular type of form. If we study dogs, it's the form of the dog. If we study elephants, it's that form. If we study a particular type of tree, it's that particular form. So there are the species and the genera. The common general shapes, and then the specifics of those which exhibit those shapes, and the general type. These are all, what can we call, classifications. And the fifth ray type is a, possesses the, well, it's not an instinct, it's the tendency towards classification. All things are to be seen and understood in their proper classes and groups. And they are seen as distinct from one another. So this is a differentiating approach. And it results in a perspective which is rather fragmented, filled with parts and pieces which are well known, but which may only later be properly related to the whole in which they find their part. The wholeness in general is not of so much concern. I mean, there are those later fifth-ray types who do study the entirety of cosmos from the big perspective, but even that can turn out to be a speciality which ignores many other parts and pieces. And the parts and pieces are appearing because of the type of consciousness that we have, which differentiates rather than sees in groupings and wholes. It is a concrete-minded consciousness. Its form and type, its parts component, all the parts that go to make up the whole, and the purposes and use of all the pieces, but not necessarily of the whole, or still less of the one who is behind the whole. That one is not suspected as real. All right, let's see. My bracket has suddenly turned slanted. I trust some future editor to eliminate my side comments except when they're really useful. Okay. So we are interested in specific things. We might be interested, I remember a friend of mine once, he later became a psychiatrist, but he was particularly interested in Drosophila, or the fruit fly. And he made a big study on the fruit fly. Well, albeit an important aspect of things, yes, I think so. But still, perhaps not the entirety of things, wouldn't you say? Well, continuing then, I study its parts component, its purposes, and its purposes and use. Whatever is the object of my study, I undertake it and try to understand the form from all angles. Okay. I try to understand the form from every perspective. And I am fascinated by what I see. I stand amazed. Now, the word amazed is interesting because this term has different connotations. And one connotation is to be astonished. And captivated by what I see with great interest. And the other connotation is to be, should we say, lost in the maze and actually bewildered by the complexity of what I see, so that I cannot get out of the maze. That is one way of being amazed. And with respect to detecting the one behind the form, the true mystery, this is the case. So often with the fifth-ray type, we do have the skepticism concerning anything beyond that which the form reveals. So I see naught else. I see I see nothing intangible, nothing beyond that which the form reveals. So I am, in a sense, blind to the subtle cause of what I see. Okay. My mind, in fact, is open to many mysteries, and I see nothing but intriguing aspects of that which I'm studying. So I do have a penetrating mind, the penetrating mind of the fifth-ray type, and I penetrate into many unrevealed things. Penetrating into many hitherto unrevealed unrevealed facts, realities, or actualities, I'll call them actualities. But, and there is the big but, I cannot and do not understand that there is something behind what the senses reveal. I do not understand that there is something to be known behind and within that which the senses have revealed to me of the garment of God. So I see, in fact, the garment of my God, and I don't even acknowledge necessarily that there is a God here. For a long time, in the law of repulse, there is no understanding until I cry aloud unto the God I have forgot, give me the key. But it takes a long time for that to happen, and I have to be in despair and not have found what I'm looking for before I really cry out. So many of the fifth-ray types are atheists at first, and later they will discover something different. It wasn't necessarily that way in the older days. It seemed that everybody believed in God, or at least God by some name or some form. I'm thinking about, you know, the Renaissance scientist on the fifth ray, like Galileo. Certainly the belief in the deity was there, and with Newton it was there, but not there so much in some of the modern fifth-ray types who lead the atheistic societies and so forth. So this is how it stands at first. We see the pre-integrative condition of the consciousness. We see a fairly integrated personality on a certain quest and pursuing a certain habit of inquiry, but we see a great limitation inasmuch as the subjective world is ignored until, as I say, in the law of repulse, a point of despair concerning what can be discovered arrives, and then there is an openness to some higher power, some greater energy or force, which is called upon to give the key. Give me the key. I alone can do no more good. Give me the key. Then silence reigned, and a key then dropped from heaven through an opening in the summit of the pyramid, the five-pointed structure or edifice in which the man was working, in one respect, the concrete mind. So now we have the higher perspective speaking. It is a higher point of view looking upon the entire situation and telling what is required. Love of the form is good, and many mystics ignore this. The value of the form is often overlooked by the solidly sixth ray type, but only as the form is known really for what it is. In other words, put into perspective with all of life. Only if the nature of the form is put into perspective with the rest of life, the subjective aspects of life. Form is the veiling vase of life. It's the outer container of the true subjectivity, of the true subjectivity, the inner undetected patterns of energy. And the form represents them, these more real aspects of life. Well, can anything really be more real than another? Certainly it's closer to the source. And it is the rare scientist who, in studying the form, thinks of it as an externalization of inner, subjective, and thus far undetected patterns. Love of the form, this is what it must not do, must never hide the life which has its place behind, within. The life, in this case, is the true God, or energy, because for the fifth-ray type, God is energy, so often. But it's a living conscious energy, living and souled conscious energy. And this deity is not suspected. As I was saying before, I recently read that the great scientist Stephen Hawking said, well, we can have this universe, no problem. There's no need for a deity in terms of how it was constructed. But I think each ray type will arrive at an estimation of deity in its own way and may call it by another name. I've said before that when Buckminster Fuller defined God, it was not a recognizable definition. I mean, it was not a definition that any churchman of the ordinary type would recognize. It was all about energy and the power of intelligence to create combinations. So I think it ends up being true that man makes God in his own image. The other is said to be the truth, and it is esoterically the truth, that God made man in his own image. And there is the hylozoistic pattern stated in that particular statement. But it's equally true that according to the quality of our consciousness, so we conceive of the deity. So love of the form, and we might almost call it preoccupation, you know, preoccupation with the form, must never hide the life which has its place behind, and that life is the one behind all the multiplicity, behind and within all the multiplicity, the one who brought the form into the light of day, in other words, who came forth as objectivity. If we follow the emanationist point of view, the one who displayed his hidden nature in a manner observable by the ordinary senses. So the light of day is manifestation, really, and the ordinarily detectable, and preserves that form, sustains that form for his use, for a particular purpose and objective. The form, we know, would quickly disappear if the notes, the music sounded by the great deity were to suddenly stop. We're being sustained by sound. And when we look at certain delicate forms of matter which demonstrate the organizing effect of sound, when the sound stops, the form which the sound has created also falls back into place and is part of the great collection of unrelated matter. So this is all being preserved for a purpose, and the preserver, the manifester of the preserver, is not suspected behind the study. Manifester, the preserver, is not suspected behind the study of that which is manifested and preserved. So the outer really is the outer, and it's not suspected as the outer. It arises from a great intelligence who invests itself in the form, in the material element, which is also, in a way, an aspect of itself, in order to create the forms which appear in the light of day. The sun, S-U-N, the S-O-N, the second aspect of divinity appearing in light, the universe as the sun, as a light being. We are dealing, all of manifestation, all that we can detect, is really a light being from Father Darkness and Mother Darkness. And Father, Mother together are the hidden deity. So we must not forget the one who actually is, who lives, and we must say who is life, and who loves, keeps all things in cohesion for purposes we cannot fathom, but certainly when we look at the things kept in cohesion for the benefit of those things, or for the benefit of the emanated aspects of itself, and also serves the form, because always the, even though it's all one thing, the higher will always serve the lower, and the greater energy will always sacrificially give to the lesser energies, which are extensions of itself. There is one who really is. There is one who is the reality. There is one who is the reality and not the actuality. Or as DK calls it, the appearance. There is life manifesting quality through appearance. And so often those who study appearance and discover its qualities relative to the possible qualities forget the sustaining life energy, which is intelligent, loving, and willing behind. So this greater perspective, the voice of this greater perspective, states how the condition in the first paragraph can be corrected, the condition of the rapidly integrating personality who does not sense divinity. And now from this life, let's call it the soul at first. The soul is an expression of life and is the one who organizes life in the three lower worlds. It knows perhaps far more of the details and the necessary arrangements for the three lower worlds than does the monad or the spirit on its own very high level. The word goes forth from soul to form. So the personality, the intelligent personality must hear this. The word of the soul goes forth from soul to form. Behind that form I am, and this is now a directive, in other words, know me. Do not only concentrate upon that which is outer. There is within a true identity to be known. So there is something behind what you are studying. This inner and compelling voice says, it's a voice that has to be listened to, I think, in a way, maybe at first, often rejected by the skeptical fifth-rate type, but eventually I think it gets through, know me. Yes, cherish and know and understand. You can love the form, you can know the form, you can understand the nature of that which veils me, the inner life, because this is good, because after all that you study is an aspect of myself, an aspect of my inner nature, and so I'm not doing this for no purpose at all. Cherish and know and understand my appearance and that those energies and forces by which I veil my truer nature, but know as well the one who lives. It's pretty obvious, you know, there's the garment of God and God, or the garment of life and life. So this is what we're witnessing here, the inner voice voice is calling for a redirection of the attention, which has been occupied with the garment. So, know me. And this has to be a kind of a shocking thought to some of the fifth-rate types who are entirely preoccupied with that which has been made evident to them through the senses. It calls for a generalized and sensitive state of mind, which is not occupied with parts and pieces. But what is interesting is that the power of isolation is very strong in the fifth-rate type, and what has to be done, the power of isolation has to be turned towards isolating the unity, if I can call it that, isolating the unity. So isolation, the ability to concentrate on one particular thing to the exclusion of all else, this is very wonderful quality of the fifth ray, can be used for good or for ill. So there is the ability to concentrate on one thing or perception to the exclusion of all else, and this thing can now be the unity. So the master is the one who achieves isolated unity. The master is an example in many ways of the fifth ray. He is the five-pointed star. He is the adept. He is focused on the fifth plane, the Atma. And even though it is the first ray primarily, which is active at the fifth initiation, the fifth ray is not far behind, and it allows the master to prove the reality of the unity which it has been isolating ever since the third initiation, which is ruled by the fifth ray. So in order to know me, know the life that lives behind, the unity has to be isolated. But this can be a progressive matter and doesn't need to occur all at once. Let not the forms of nature, their processes and powers, which you study intensively, prevent thy searching for the mystery, which is God or the life, which brought the mysteries to thee. There would be no outer mysteries unless God had externalized himself in the mysteries. There would be no outer mysteries without the externalization of the One, who, in a way, let us say, in a way, is the mysteries. The mysteries are the emanated, the relationships of the emanated aspects of the One. So the mysteries are the unsuspected aspects, interrelationships of the emanations of the One. All is God, all is of God, all is the presence of God. It's amazing, you know, when you look at anything whatsoever on whatever plane, it's all the presence of the deity. It's a kind of a philosophical, emanative pantheism, much rejected by other types of minds who consider pantheism to be a heresy or a great distortion. In other words, they are quite intent on holding God as separate from his creation, but there is God immanent. That is the pantheistic point of view. God is not only within his creation, but is his creation, although the entirety of God is not the creation, just the way any universe is not the entirety of the Absolute, but the slightest fragment of it, really. An ultimate negligibility, as I tend to call it. All negligibilities are ultimately ultimate negligibilities. So, but the scientist does not at first suspect that what he's studying is really God. So leave the form. Know it well and use it, and it has purposes and uses and so forth. But leave it joyously and search for me. In other words, redirect your attention to the One behind and within all that you study. And this calls for a dual state of mind, which thus far very few upon the fifth ray possess. But then again, all of us on all the various rays, we do not yet exhibit the fullness of the qualities of our ray. Always something is missing, and we grow into a fuller expression of the ray. So the voice continues, and the voice from the inner soul, that better and higher part of the self which is speaking to the personality mind, which may feel quite adequate in itself, but is now being instructed in a new way. Detach thy thought from form. See, let's just say the study of form has preoccupied the thought of the fifth ray type. And find me. It's all about self-discovery. All this is about self-discovery by one who is quite convinced at first that there is no self to discover. So it's quite a shock, eventually, that occurs. Detach thyself, thy thought from form, and find me waiting underneath the veils. A deeper penetration is needed, a deeper penetration. And all the things you've been studying, the many-sided shapes, because, you know, the fifth-ray types, they tend to enumerate and count. They are the mathematical types, as DK says, or at least let's call them the arithmetic types. I've often wondered, you know, when we talk about the higher mathematics, will we have the third-ray type or the fifth-ray type, or will the best among the higher mathematicians be a combination of both? And find me, the true life, the one, waiting underneath the veils, that is, underneath that which hides me, usually, the many-sided shapes, the glamours, the misleading forms of emotional forms, and the thought forms, because after all, in the future, there will be fifth-ray types who are going to be studying the more subtle aspects of the garment of God, which does not yet mean that they study God. It doesn't mean that they understand that there's a real self behind all this subtlety. The students of the inner worlds may not yet know there is a sponsoring self behind these worlds. They may just say, okay, these are simply additional aspects of nature which we can study, though I must say there is a tendency of those who are going to study the emotional forms and the mental forms to have the idea that indeed these have come from some inner source. I think there is that tendency. It's those who are mostly captured in the very densest world, the world of the systemic gaseous, liquid, and utterly dense, that tend not to think of the Creator behind. But this is not inevitably true. I have been in the churches and I've seen the sixth-ray souls who have fifth-ray personalities or fifth-ray minds, and they are students of nature, but they are also believers, we might say. One of my really interesting experiences was to speak long ago with the head of the organic chemistry classes in a university, and he had been solidly on the fifth ray, and he suddenly got religion. It was really interesting. Obviously, he was a sixth ray soul with a very strong fifth ray, and he had dichotomized all this. He was no longer so interested in what he had been studying. He was going through that type of crisis, which is described in Esoteric Psychology 2 on page 335, a sort of midlife crisis where you switch emphasis from the personality ray to the soul ray, and these were like two different worlds for him right now. He was now absorbed into the world of religion, and he had entirely, it was difficult for him to see the value of what he had been studying, but of course later he could put those two things together and realize that this is God's world. It is indeed the garment of God, for our purposes, the planetary logos, and that all of this is a creation, and so have new respect for what he had been studying, but seeing it in a different light. So, find me waiting underneath the veils, the many-sided shapes, the glamours, and the thought forms, because all the many thought forms and all the many emotional forms, so many of which are misleading and glamorous, on the plane of emotion. They still are veils, they still are invitations to preoccupation for the questing mind. And the mind is attached to them. Any object of study can result in an attachment. Or let's see, one can study in an attached manner or in a detached manner. Knowing the origin of that which one studies, or becoming so preoccupied with it that it's the only thing, and it is, in a way, divorced from its central cause. Or maybe the central cause is not even cared about very much, just as long as one can study the appearance, because that's where the interest is. But here's this good advice coming forward from a voice or a source that knows. Be not deceived. Don't be deceived by your lower mind, really, which is, in one sense, the slayer of the real. Be not deceived by the lower mind and its revelations. There is more to life than can be revealed by its limited capacities. So don't think that what you are seeing is reality. Be not deceived. Find me, know me, the life. Detect. This is your great research project. To find me is the great research progress project. The first step on a deeper search, as we are told in the second ray stanza. When certain of these pieces of advice have been followed or are being engaged in, then we're taking the first steps towards a deeper search, and this is, for the fifth ray type, really a deeper search, to find the me, the I, behind it all. This is a far deeper search. And the power of knowledge, you know, to register all of the interrelations of any object of study, knowledge has to be applied now to the originating source or the pursuit of knowledge. To become a knower of God, this is what is required, to become a knower of God. This is now required. Then use, because the ability to apply, to manipulate form, rather than thought per se, but to manipulate form is very much of the fifth ray, then use the forms. They are still there, and you can and should know about them, which then will neither veil nor hide the self. Notice that self, the one, and God are all equivalent here. Self, self, the one, and God, all equivalent. And this is, these terms are not always given equivalence, but in occultism they are. Then use the forms, which then will neither veil nor hide the true source, the true life, but will permit the nature of that self, which essentially you are, to penetrate, to infuse the veils of life, to rend the veils of life. The power of God, the self, will demonstrate through the previously opaque veils and reveal his nature. If we can create that alignment, if we can create the necessary alignment with the suspected, now suspected, let's call it that, now suspected source, the source will respond, just like the Father responds, coming down the Antikorana to meet the rising sun, the prodigal son returning. So the self will be seen as penetrating the veils, and in fact, some of the veiling thought forms will be destroyed by the presence. The veiling thought forms and glamours will be destroyed by the nearing presence. The presence which now asserts itself, just as the monad can assert itself and destroy all obstacles to its fuller realization. But we'll permit the nature of that self to penetrate the veils of life and revealing the great light, you know, I then look out upon a world of light divine. The fifth ray type loves light. It's like the second ray in that way, and it is interested in searching for light on all matters and for the great light from which comes light on all matters. Eventually, it is interested in that. So the luminosity, the radiance of God will be revealed when the opacity of the veils is dispelled or dissipated, rendered non-effective. Revealing all the radiance of God, His power and magnetism, in other words, the energies of the One are now revealed, of the planetary logos in this case, and this will prove, as we might say for the fifth ray, most interesting. Most interesting for the advancing fifth ray type. Revealing not only all there is of God with the tremendous and unsuspected powers and magnetism, but revealing as well all there is of form and of living activity, we might say. Sometimes life and activity are given equivalents. Maybe it depends on whether it's capitalized or not, but the vitality of the form, where it comes from, and the beauty of creation seen in the light of meaning within the larger whole, which is now detected, and the usefulness of the form in bringing about the manifestation of the plan, which is now cognized, and the purpose of the deity, the usefulness in bringing into expression the purpose of the deity, which has now been registered. Form. The forms can help bring the purposes of deity into expression. Deity now being registered. The usefulness of the forms in this process is understood, or better understood. Takes a long time to understand completely. We're still dealing here with the aspirant disciple who is waking up to the possibility of being integrated with the soul, which sees the, in this case, the radiance of the One. And then comes the summation. The mind does in fact and can in fact reveal the One. It has hitherto revealed the many. The mind has hitherto revealed the many and not the One. But it can when the voice of the soul is attended to. The mind can be redirected and its revelatory powers are greatly enhanced. So the mind reveals the One, the mind can blend and fuse both form and life. The mind is kind of a middle principle. There's the outer and there's the inner, and the mind can be the mediator between them and show their relationship. The mind can show the relationship between form and life, and can help bring them together. Well, you think about the solar angels exemplifying the fifth ray and how they bring together the life of man, his monadic nature, and his outer appearance, his outer personal vehicle. It's not just bringing them together in cognizance, it's bringing them together in interactivity so that they mutually affect. The mind can bring about a mutual affecting of the poles. So they interact. And, whoop. So that they interact and influence each other. And then this is the way you have to use your mind now that you are becoming a soul-infused being. You who are souls upon the fifth ray. Okay. So thou art, now comes the summary statement, thou art the one. You who suspected that you were simply an isolated intelligence, human intelligence in the lower world, are in fact the one behind all that you study. Not only are you God, the one, but you are also the form you are studying. Thou art the form, and thou art as well the mind. So three factors are going to unite for the fifth ray type. Three factors will unite. Well, we know this when we speak of the type of mind that the fifth ray has. We use the word of power, three minds unite. And then in the solar angelic stanzas, the great triangle begins its revolutions, and its rays reach out in all directions and permeate the whole. So again, the three become one. The power to fuse the three into one belongs to the fifth ray. How interesting that is. The power to fuse the three into the one belongs to the fifth ray. And I'm recalling, you know, in that third initiation stanza, swept am I by the universal life, and as I sweep upon my onward way, I see all lesser energies die out. I am the one, I God. I am the form in which all forms are merged, just as it says here. I am the soul in which all souls are fused. That's the mind part. The soul is found on the plane of mind. I am the life, and in that life all little lives remain. So in that summary statement concerning the third initiation, the same pattern is stated. The one, the form, and the mind. And this is what the knower, the fifth-ray knower, must know. He becomes now a true knower of God. He becomes a true knower of God, and not only of the garment of God, but, yes, of the garment of God as an expression of God and as himself, the knower. So the previous knower of the form becomes the knower, that which is known, and the knowing. And thus the three unite in one. And the knower, the known, and the knowing all become fused. And the great separator, well, the third ray is called that, but the fifth ray has that quality as well, working under the law of cleavages. The one who was able so much to separate and fragment and distinguish with the mind now fuses. So the fifth ray mental potential becomes a fusing potential. And the three distinct parts are seen as one. Well, these are the main parts, these three. Seen as one and known as one. One becomes a true knower of God. And one becomes God. Well, that is the final fate and condition of all who study and persist along a ray line. Eventually they know themselves as the one. But the roads followed are very, very different. There's not one master along whatever ray who does not know himself as the one, and also as that which the one has produced through its objectivizing, its emanation. And he knows himself as well to be the knowing that knows both the one and the many. So there's always a great synthesis coming together at the end of any ray line. And if we are looking at all kinds of distinctions between the rays, at least some of these distinctions will disappear and begin to blend and fuse towards points in common as we rise along that ray line towards the higher types of initiatory achievements. Well, let's take a look at this, just reading it through, just in summary, and then we'll read it once without any interruption. Towards me, I draw the garment of my God. Well, perhaps there is some belief, or it really is the garment of God, and the one who draws it towards him, the intelligent personality, doesn't know it's of God, but the one who's writing this stanza knows that the garment is of God, even if the one who draws the outer expression of God toward him doesn't know that God is behind it. Anyway, I study what is before my eyes. I study that which the senses reveals. I see and know his form, mostly without him in mind. Or if he's in mind, it's in a very vague way and not as the sponsoring energy, the energy which really has emanated and become the form I'm studying. So I see and know at least his form. I see and know the form, and I use my five senses acutely to do that. And I take, with my manipulating hand, that garment piece by piece, and I hold it in front of my eyes, particularly the eyes being associated with the fifth ray, and I examine every piece and every part with very close scrutiny, not letting any impression escape, so I know with entirety that particular part and piece. I don't know the whole, but I know the object which is under examination. I have objectivity. I am the one who studies, and there is the object. The object is separated, or the subject who I am is separated from the object. So I see the various things which the senses tell me about it. I know its shape and its color, in contrast with all the other possible shapes and colors, its general form and its classification, its type, all the parts of which it is made, because I love to divide. I divide, and then the divisions into which I have divided a greater whole, I subdivide them further, and subdivide, until I come to the tiniest possible parts that I can observe. We see this a lot in modern physics, chasing after evanescent particles that are of the tiniest scope and smallest duration in time. The question for the fifth ray often is how subdivisible is what I'm studying. So the little part becomes the whole, and all the subdivisions within it become of interest to me, as if I could tell the nature of the whole from understanding all the subdivisions. This is partially true. I study its component parts and its purposes, the purpose of the form, how it can be applied, and its utilitarian its use, its utilitarian function. What's it good for? What's it good for in the eyes of man, not necessarily in the eyes of God, but what is the role to be played here? And as I study that role, of course, I can possibly begin expanding into the larger context. But still, I'm not interested in the one who stands behind. It's as if it's an unreality. And I'm very fascinated by all of this. My attention is drawn. I'm a I attach my thought to what I'm studying, and I experience wonder in what I'm studying. I am perhaps confused, however, because there are so many, many things to study, but at least I'm in a state of wonder regarding this particular form that's before my eyes. And I don't see anything else. I'm very focused. I have that laser-like attention on the object of my study. And so I penetrate deeper and deeper into the mysteries of the object that I'm studying. And there are many undisclosed interrelations between the component parts of what I'm studying and between the relations of what I'm studying and similar other objects or other objects that are different. Some of the interrelationships I do begin to sense. But as far as there being a mystery behind the mysterious something I'm studying, I don't pay attention to that. I see only the garment of my God without really knowing it's a garment. The one who's writing the stanza knows it's a garment. But I don't see anything else. Only the garment. I'm bewildered, or at least my perception stops at that which is outer. And the true world of causes is hidden from me. I have not penetrated that yet. So a wiser voice speaks, love of the form is good, because the form indeed is of God and must be used. But only as that form is known for what it is, its true place in the larger context of life is understood. It's the container of the inner life, of the inner God, inner self, the inner being. We can call it whatever. The veiling vase, it's the container, and within it, within the vase, is the true life. But so far, the capacity to really penetrate within the vase is missing, beyond the outer shell. This type cannot yet penetrate. Love of the form, which is good, must never hide the life which has its place behind. And that life is the one who actually is the reason that the form exists at all, and brought that form into objectivity so it can be sensed, seen by the senses, sensed by the senses. And it is sustained in ways that are hard to understand through sound, through thought. This form, which you think is so permanent, could disappear at any point if it were not sustained from the inner worlds. So the one brought the form into visibility, into it made of its own inner patterns, an outer pattern called an appearance, and that appearance exists in the light of day. In other words, it can be detected. Whereas so far, given the limited type of perceptual apparatus and mind that you have, it cannot yet, the inner source of the appearance cannot yet be detected. And the outer appearance is preserved for good purpose, for the use of its source. He is the one who lives and who loves and who serves the form. The greater always lives in the form, loves it, serves it. He is the one who is, and this one you do not detect. But now there will be a possibility, because the word of the soul comes forth and it begins to be registered inside the personal consciousness. I begin to register a thought that maybe what I'm looking at is not an end in itself. It is simply an effect of something else that might prove much more interesting. The fifth ray will always follow interest and fascination, and is amazed by so many interesting things. But the fusing power of the mind is not yet there. The word goes forth from soul to form. Within my personal consciousness, I hear this. Behind that form, I am. Know me. Who are you? Well, I'm something else. Yes, you can keep on doing what you're doing. Cherish and know and understand the nature of the veils of life, but they are only the veils of life. You've done well to understand the many mysteries of form. DK sometimes talks about the many amazing discoveries that have been made by the fifth-ray type in the world of conventional medicine, He speaks about this in Esoteric Healing. They have many, many fascinating discoveries concerning the bodily form. This is all to the good. One needs to know about this. But please at least divide your attention and realize there's something else to be studied behind the form. Know me, the one who lives. And do not do the following. Let not the forms of nature, their processes and powers, prevent thy searching for the mystery. So you don't get so preoccupied with the outer form that you fail to search for the mystery, which is really responsible for bringing to you all of those items of interest which are preoccupying you. The expressions of the inner source are, in a way, far less interesting than the one who somehow is the outer source. If you find the outer results fascinating, just think of the kind of fascination of the one who has generated those outer results out of itself. So know me. And search now for the mystery as even more fascinating to you than the many mysteries which preoccupy your mind. Do not relinquish your accurate knowledge of form, but leave that preoccupation happily and in faith, which you have not had yet, because you only believe what you can prove, but you can prove it, and joyously search for me, the true sponsor of all the fascination which has preoccupied you. So, what to do? Detach thy thought. Stop thinking about only the form, and attach your thought to me, the true life, who is waiting underneath the veils. You don't know their veils yet, but begin to realize they are veils. They are veiling something that you would find much more fascinating. These veils, the many-sided shapes, your love of enumeration, the particular forms which are actually veiling and hiding me, but you find them interesting to study, these glamours and thought forms which hide my real self. Don't be only preoccupied with them. Don't be deceived into thinking that this is reality. It's only actuality. It's only appearance. Find me, know me. Change your reorientation. Look within. The kingdom of heaven is within. The kingdom of God is within. And realize you are on a great quest, a great scientific research, which is of far greater interest than your preoccupations with the evidences of me, the inner God. Then, when you find me and know me, you can do something with both. You can use the forms which you have hitherto studied, and these forms will not be a veil anymore. Your mind will penetrate beyond and through them. Then use the forms which then will neither veil nor hide the self which I am and the self which you are, but will permit the nature of that self now to penetrate the veils. You will see the great power of God working through the hitherto opaque veils. And through them, you will now see the radiance of God, the radiance of the self, your own radiance, his power and magnetism. You will not be blind anymore when you are studying the outer forms to the sponsor of those forms, but will see that sponsor through all the interesting activities of the forms. And that great and higher power will reveal also all there is of form and its purpose and its beauty and its usefulness within the plan and the purpose which you can now begin to detect. You begin to connect the dots. You begin to see why the form exists at all and what role it is to play in a much larger context than you had previously considered. You'll see the plan and purpose of the whole, and all that you had studied will take on a new meaning, a new placement within that larger context, a new function. And you'll be amazed by this, and amazed by God at the same time, and be in wonder of the interrelationship between God and form. You have the mind, and it can reveal the one, which you have hitherto not done, but which you are now beginning to do. And you can use the mind to find the relationship between form and the life behind the form. So the mind will show the interaction between these two which you had not suspected. And now, in summary, who are you anyway? That now that you are approaching your center, now that the integration of soul and form are occurring, of course, in a way this points to something even larger than the integration of soul and form, but okay, thou art the one, in fact. The one of whom you have become aware, as behind all the forms, is really you. And you are also the evidences of that one. You are the form you have been studying. Did you know that? And you certainly identified yourself as the mind, no problem there, but you are the source of the mind, the source of the form, you are the mind itself. Put the three together and know you are all three. There's many things you have known, many interests you have pursued, but know this above all, that you are the major three. You are each one of them, and all of them together know this. Towards me I draw the garment of my God. I see and know his form. I take that garment piece by piece. I know its shape and color, its form and type, its parts component, and its purposes and use. I stand amazed. I see naught else. I penetrate the mysteries of form, but not the mystery. I see the garment of my God. I see naught else. Love of the form is good, but only as that form is known for what it is. Only as the form is known for what it is, the veiling vase of life. Love of the form must never hide the life which has its place behind. The one who brought the form into the light of day and preserves it for his use. The one who lives and loves and serves the form. The one who is. The word goes forth from soul to form. Behind that form I am. Know me. Cherish and know and understand the nature of the veils of life. But know as well the one who lives. Know me. Let not the forms of nature, their processes and powers, prevent thy searching for the mystery which brought the mysteries to thee. Know well the form, but leave it joyously and search for me. Detach thy thought from form and find me waiting underneath the veils, the many-sided shapes, the glamours and the thought forms which hide my real self. Be not deceived. Find me. Know me. Then use the forms which then will neither veil nor hide the self, but will permit the nature of that self to penetrate the veils of life, revealing all the radiance of God, his power and magnetism, revealing all there is of form, of life, of beauty and usefulness. The mind reveals the one. The mind can blend and fuse both form and life. Thou art the one. Thou art the form. Thou art the mind. Know this. Okay. Well, we're concluding with that now, and we'll say that this is the end of Techniques of Integration, webinar commentaries number 12, EP2, page 369, and beginning of Techniques of Integration webinar commentaries number 13, EP2, page 369, and we will go on and study the important things that Master DK has to say about this stanza. It's a long stanza, longer than the others, really, more into the detail, but the types upon this ray are so resistant to seeing the one at first until their fascination with the form begins to reveal that behind this form is a great energy, which is universal life, which is the one, which is the self, which is the true being. And then the power of the fifth ray as the great connector can begin to connect these different aspects of divinity and see them all as one, resolving the many into one through a deep understanding of every one of the aspects, seeing the interrelations of all of them, and realizing behind multiplicity must be the one. Okay, that will be all for the moment, and we will move on. So we'll see you soon for number 13.